Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Along with Brian Murphy, Dennis Cox here with you this afternoon on 99.9 The Fan. Graham Hill is producing us. Let's dive right into it. Let's get right into the Daily Checkdown brought to you by Window Nation. Stanley Cup Finals Game 1 starts tomorrow. It is the Florida Panthers at the Vegas Golden Knights. You can actually listen to that right here on 99.9 The Fan. Now, I know the Carolina Hurricanes are not in it, Brian Murphy. Again, they're in there at the expense of the Carolina Hurricanes. It saddens and hurts my heart. But if Carolina, us as Raleigh, we see ourselves as a hockey market, right? We're hockey fans. I love the sport. I grew up playing it. I still play it. And if we want to continue to change the perception that this area is just a bunch of fly-by-night fans that really don't know hockey or whatever it is, that it's not a hockey market. I think if we can continue to change that mindset by us as a small market, non-traditional market, can watch two non-traditional markets go at it in the Stanley Cup Finals and be invested as quote-unquote casual fans. I think that can help change the mindset. If we want to change that mindset for us, we have to continue to change that mindset for others.
Vegas Golden Knights hosting Game 1 against the Florida Panthers. Vegas is favored in the series.
As they should be.
Not a heavy, heavy favorite, but not as much a favorite as say, the Denver Nuggets are, but a favorite, a solid favorite. We saw what the Panthers could do. If Tkachuk and Bobrovsky can continue to do what they did against the Carolina Panthers.
They haven't played in like over a
week. I know, it feels like a long time ago.
It's kind of like the Nuggets. It's been 10 days. It'd be 10 days since they last played.
And I don't know who that advantage is. Like, we always talk about, is it better to have, you know, the fresh legs, or is it better to have the rhythm of playing? Miami had just played in the NBA Finals. They couldn't shoot very well last night. I don't know if that was the altitude. Obviously, long trip from Sunrise, Florida to Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. This is going to be racking up some cross-country frequent flyer miles in this series.
It should be a fun series, and I'm looking forward to seeing a franchise win their first Stanley Cup. And Vegas has only been around for 6 years, and they're back in the Stanley Cup Finals again. Again. Which is pretty remarkable.
We talked earlier about betting, obviously a lot of gambling talk. Mm-hmm. Who's the favorite right now for the Conn Smythe? Who do you think takes home the Conn Smythe?
Oh, for playoff MVP, it's either going to come down to Bobrovsky or it's going to come down to Matthew Tkachuk, I think.
But that's if Florida wins.
If Florida wins. Jonathan Marchessault for Las Vegas. He's scored. You talk about Matthew Tkachuk, multiple game winners against the Carolina Hurricanes, multiple game winners in overtime for Jonathan Marchessault for Vegas against Dallas. But that guy has just been a playoff machine, Jonathan Marchessault.
Bobrovsky is the favorite right now.
Is he really?
Yeah, with Tkachuk behind him and Eichel, who's had a really who's had a really good postseason, also plus 425 to take the Conn Smythe Trophy for MVP.
Next up.
One of the four, all of the four, or half of the four.
You mentioned the Denver Nuggets NBA Finals. Game one was last night, 104-93. Denver Nuggets take down the Miami Heat in game one. Well-rested Denver Nuggets team, having not played in 10 days. It seemed like yesterday that no matter what Miami did defensively, whether it was trying to double-team Jokic, whether it was trying to go zone against him, that Denver was still able to get quality looks. Now, sometimes against the zone yesterday, Denver still got some really good looks. They just didn't make some shots, but they got quality looks and open looks. And it just goes to show you that no matter what offense, no matter what defense you throw at Denver, they got an answer for you.
Yeah, no question who the MVP of the NBA playoffs has been so far.
Yeah.
And will be. The thought of Miami beating Denver four times in six games, which is what they'll have to do to win the NBA title, just seems, after watching last night's game, seems impossible.
Yeah.
Because, as you said, they threw everything. They threw zone. They threw double teams. They threw all kinds of things at Jokic, and it doesn't matter. He is able to dissect any defense they threw at him. I'm sure Eric Spoelstra, one of the best coaches, if not the best coach in the NBA, will come up with something. I just don't know if it's enough to slow down Denver because Jokic is so good. But they also have Jamal Murray.
Yeah.
They also have Aaron Gordon, who it looked like
great
last
defender.
Night Miami did not have a big enough body to put on him to stop him. Michael Porter Jr., Brent Brown off the bench has had a terrific postseason. It just seems like Denver has more answers. And when you watch Miami throughout the playoffs, they played the Knicks, whose offense just stands around. They played Boston, who, as good as Boston is, their offense just stands around, lets one guy try to win. This offense is so different. I'm not sure what the Heat they'll have to dig deep into their bag of tricks, I think.
I think for them, what they need to do, talking about terms of like, it's funny when you hear the adage of, oh, team's got to make an adjustment. Like, okay, well, what would that adjustment be to you, sir? I think it's when, for example, Bam Adebayo had 26 points yesterday, the center. Shout out to Washington, North Carolina, where Bam Adebayo is from. But he settled for a bunch of 14-foot jump shots against Jokic. Okay, yeah, he hit 13 shots yesterday, but the team as a whole, Miami attempted 2 free throws. That's it, just 2. They actually took way more shots overall, again, because not having free throws, those shot attempts were being counted against Miami. But because of all the shot attempts put up, I think they put up over 17 more shots overall when we look at the box score than they did Denver yesterday. So I think for them, for example, Bam Adebayo, when you get that ball near the free throw line, you got to attack Jokic. Attack the cup, attack the rim. Pick up a couple fouls early against Jokic if you can, because guess what? That means you got to rotate him out. That's when you can really start making some hay on defense with Jokic out. You have to be more aggressive. You have to get to the rim.
And you got to beat Denver in Denver. Nobody's been able to do that this postseason.
Nope.
If Miami's going to win the title, they've got to win at least one game in Denver. It feels inevitable right now that the Nuggets are going to win this.
Jimmy Butler actually talked about the lack of free throw attempts for the Miami Heat yesterday.
Probably because we shot a lot of jump shots, myself probably leading that pack, instead of putting pressure on the rim, getting layups, getting to the free throw line. You know, when you look at it during the game, they all look like the right shots. And I'm not saying that we can't as a team make those, but got to get more layups, got to get more free throws. And whenever you miss and don't get back, the game gets out of hand kind of quickly. We gave up too many layups, which we also can't have happen. But that's it as a whole. We got to attack the rim a lot more, myself included.
Yeah, look at fast break points. We're talking about not getting back. Denver 46. Points in the paint. 46 points in the paint.
It helps to have the 2-time MVP 7-footer dominating the paint for you.
Denver led as much as 24. All right, next up.
1, 2, 3.
The SEC announced for 2024 for football. They announced that their schedule is going to be an 8-game conference schedule.
Chickens. They're scared. They're scared.
No, they're afraid to play themselves. Yeah. You're saying, hey, we're so good, we're afraid to play ourselves.
How do you go to a 16-team conference and only play 8 conference games?
Great question.
Chickens. The big boys wanted to go to 9. It's the ones who are worried about bowl eligibility.
Yeah.
That say, whoa, time out. I need an extra game against Sisters of the Poor.
Yeah, I need that group. I need another group of 5 game.
I need that automatic win. I need that home game, and I need to get to 6-6 so I can go to a bowl game.
I need that matchup versus Ball State that everyone is coveting. Now, how does this impact the ACC? Now, again, this is just for 2024 that the SEC is doing this. If they stick with an 8-game schedule moving forward, how does this impact the ACC? Well, if the SEC were to have a 9-game schedule, there are 3 non-conference games. They would schedule 1 Power 5, which for a lot of these SEC teams, it's already built in against an ACC school. For example, Kentucky versus Louisville, Clemson versus South Carolina, Georgia, Georgia Tech, Florida State. Those kinds of games would still exist. But outside of that, they're not going to go ahead and schedule another ACC game. They're going to schedule a group of 5, and they're going to schedule an FCS school is what they're going to do. Or they're going to schedule a really bad group of 5 as opposed to an FCS. That's what they're going to do. Like, they're going to go into the American, and they're gonna try and schedule an East Carolina. Because, like, okay, like, it's a good group of five school, but we don't have to worry about losing to a power five, potentially. So the ACC has the opportunity to play more SEC games or games against SEC teams in the non-conference, because the ACC itself also has an eight-game conference schedule. So that helps the profile of the conference. But again, a conference football or college football playoff that it's expanding to 12 teams. So if you have good non-conference schedule, that boosts the profile not only of your school, but of the ACC as a whole.
Yeah, the SEC is protecting themselves, right?
They're trying to.
If you're Georgia and you got to play Texas and you got to play Alabama, do you also need to play Oklahoma or LSU?
No.
You know, because you might be able to afford two losses and still make the tournament, mm-hmm. still make the 12-team, you know, playoff. I just feel like eventually this is going to change, and I think it's going to have an impact on the ACC.
Yeah.
The Big Ten is at 9 conference games. The Pac-12 is at 9 conference games. The Big 12 is at 9 conference games. The SEC, we'll see what they do. But who is the ACC going to play? Eventually, I think the ACC is going to have to go to 9 conference games as well, because there's simply not going to be enough opponents out there to fill out your schedule. Having Notre Dame play 5 teams helps.
Yeah.
Certainly helps. And having that guaranteed rival game for a lot of members against an SEC team helps. But eventually, this may force the ACC's hand to go to 9.
I know there are future games coming up. I know NC State and Florida have a future date set up.
Right.
Does that get scrapped? Because if Florida's going to sit there and say, like, well, we got to drop somebody because, you know, the SEC's making us play an extra conference game. So we saw back in 2020 with COVID that the schedules can be made up on the spot.
One of the arguments some of the teams in the SEC made for not going to 9 was all these non-conference games that we would have to cancel. We have to pay money to get out of these games.
That's true.
And ESPN has decided, at least at this point, not to kick in extra money to the SEC for going from 8 to 9.
Mm-hmm.
Feels like a leverage play. All right, we'll keep playing 8 until ESPN ponies up a little bit more money.
Now, speaking of ESPN and networks, right now, because the Big Ten doesn't have any ESPN or ABC time slots this upcoming season, right? So as far as I'm concerned, Brian Murphy, we're going to see a lot of ACC and SEC on prime time or in prime time slots, I should say, on ABC on network television.
Yeah, just look at the first 3 weeks, and that's what the ACC has put out. That's mm-hmm. what the networks have put out. Week 1, Virginia-Tennessee. Week 2, Notre Dame-NC State right here in Raleigh. That's going to be a big one. Week 3, Boston College-Florida State. Those are the noon games on ABC the first 3 weeks of the season. You look at primetime on ABC, 7:30 ABC. Week 1, North Carolina versus South Carolina from Charlotte. On the Sunday night, Labor Day night, Florida State-LSU. Week 3, Pittsburgh against West Virginia. You go to week 2 on ABC. You got that Notre Dame-NC State games at noon, Miami-Texas A&M's at 3:30. I mean, those are primetime spots for the ACC that would have been – a lot of those would have been gobbled up by the Big Ten. This is a chance for the ACC to prove that, like, we're not just Clemson.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a lot of other schools can notch some significant non-conference wins. And if it does turn out just to be Clemson at the end of the year, well, Clemson will have beaten teams that beat these other teams. So, I mean, it's really good for the league if they can go do work in non-conference and do work on these big, you know, primetime or showcase kind of types of games on the schedule.
Next up.
And I don't even care who number 2 is.
Sports betting is coming here to the state of North Carolina. By all accounts, Brian Murphy, it passed through the Senate. Looks like the House is going to concur with that next week. It's going to go to Roy Cooper. And by all indications from what he has said in the past, he's going to sign off on sports betting. It's going to be legal in the state of North Carolina. All right, cool. That's awesome. On to the next step. Okay, what comes from that? There have been a lot. We had Philip Isley, chairman of the Centennial Authority, sitting right between us here earlier this afternoon about what potential things could happen at PNC. And two words that were really thrown out there a lot: enhancements and development. Enhancements being things taking place inside PNC Arena to help with fan experience, but also make things a little bit more amenable for concerts and other large events to come into PNC, Brian. Potentially like a third floor bar where if I'm a Canes fan, I'm out there watching hockey game. Wait, I can sit at a bar on the third level and watch the game that way. That sounds like a lot of fun. But then the other word thrown out there, development, which is something the Carolina Hurricanes and owner Tom Dundon want to do. That's developing the area outside PNC Arena.
Yeah, probably the biggest news from that, and you can listen to the entire conversation on our YouTube page or at the Best of 99.9 The Fan podcast.
Yep.
The biggest news to come out of that is Philip Eisele said that within a matter of weeks, there may be an agreement between the Hurricanes and Centennial Authority to both extend the lease, which runs out, I think, at the end of the 2029 season, and to give some sort of development rights to the Carolina Hurricanes to develop in phases some of the land around PNC Arena. These are huge. That's a huge development. Those are things that the Hurricanes have wanted for a really long time.
Yeah.
Sports betting plays a very minor role in this, in all that. Now, there will be a sports book at PNC Arena. The way the bill is crafted, and I've covered this extensively, it does seem to open the door for not only a sports book at PNC Arena, but another one located within a half mile of PNC Arena. Be interesting to see if they decide to go the two sports book route or just decide to build maybe one big one. Do they end up competing against each other in some ways? They would be run by the same company.
Yep.
You couldn't have the DraftKings Sportsbook over here and the FanDuel Sportsbook over there. Whoever gets the license out there with PNC Arena would have to run both books. But, yeah, this is a potentially huge development, not only sports gambling, but an agreement to keep the Hurricanes in Raleigh for another two decades, quarter of a century. One thing I'll add on the sports betting, even if it gets passed next week, and it does look like it will, and it will get signed into law, the soonest you'd be able to bet is January 8th
yes.
of 2024. And that's the soonest you'd be able to bet. It may be even later than that, sports betting is up and running in the state of North Carolina.
My guess is the Lottery Commission is already starting to get stuff in process in terms of laying out the process for these sports books like a DraftKings, FanDuel, to buy their licenses and things along those lines. But development outside of PNC Arena, if I'm the Canes and I if I'm them, I want a sports book outside the arena as well, because if I build a hotel or a restaurant or something like that, I can attach the sports book to that facility as well. Because if you stay at the hotel there, I'm like, oh, I can just walk downstairs and I can get something to eat. Oh, there's a bunch of games on. I can just place a little cash bet here if I want to. That's an enticing thing to have. And we might, again, see an opportunity for NC State to possibly be involved in this in some way, shape, or form, or benefit in this in some way, shape, or form, because they are a tenant of PNC Arena as well.
Yeah, maybe we could talk about it later, but there are 8 facilities in the state under the criteria that's in the bill that would be allowed to open these sports books. The two in the triangle would be PNC Arena and Wake Med Soccer Park.
Yeah.
Because they are home to the NWSL's Carolina Courage. I don't know. I have not spoken with anyone at Wake Med. That is a different clientele.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't want to put in a sports book, but they would have the ability to put one in up to a half mile radius around the facility out there. So maybe there's some development out there that would love to have a sports book.
All right, next up.
Thank you for listening to the Best of the Drive podcast. I'm Tim Donnelly here with Coach Pete DeRuda, America's wealth coach and best-selling author. Coach, one of the big questions I always hear is, do I have enough money to retire?
Well, maybe, maybe not. The most important thing is you have lifetime income you can never outlive. We'll design that plan for the next 10 people to call. No cost or obligation. Put yourself in control of retirement.
Call 800-691-3215. You can also text Tim to 600-700. That's T-I-M to 600-700. You'll hear from Coach Pete and the Capital Financial Advisory Group.
I'm just gonna say it's the College World Series. It starts with 64.
You're jumping ahead.
I'm jumping ahead. It's the road to Omaha. It's already taking place. We had two matchups of teams in the state of North Carolina playing against each other, with Duke playing UNC Wilmington, Campbell playing NC State. It sucks that both those games had to go to the state of South Carolina to be played. That's unfortunate because you had to go to South Carolina. These games should have been kept in North Carolina. But we do have final scores. Earlier this afternoon, we saw NC State beat Campbell 5-1 in that game. Campbell is now into the loser's bracket. They play the loser of Central Connecticut State and South Carolina. They play the loser of that game tomorrow at noon. NC State gets the winner of that game. UNC Wilmington had an early lead against Duke, but they eventually fall 12-3 to the Blue Devils. So Duke will face the winner of Coastal Carolina and Ryder. Coastal Carolina, the host of that location, of that regional. The loser of Ryder Coastal Carolina plays UNC Wilmington tomorrow. Again, that game is also at noon. Here's something to keep in mind as well. Wake Forest still has to play. They play tonight. They also have tonight. We also see.
Yeah, there's four games.
I'm losing the game right off the top of my head.
There's
four
games tonight. East Carolina versus Oklahoma.
East Carolina, that's right.
Tennessee versus Charlotte. UNC versus Iowa. That game is on ACC Network at 7 o'clock. And then the number one overall seed in the whole tournament, Wake Forest at home against George Mason in their first game in the Winston-Salem regional. So a lot of big baseball coming up for teams in the state tonight.
I was scrolling through, looking through the lot, and my computer froze on me. I was like, I know they're playing these games. That's the thing. There's eight schools in the state of North Carolina that are playing in the College World Series. I'm calling it the College World Series. It's what it is. It's the College World Series. Like, we have March Madness. It's just the College World Series. But North Carolina has an opportunity. I feel like playing Iowa, they'll get Indiana State, a team that doesn't have quite the level of experience of postseason play. They had to come back against Wright State in their game earlier today. Again, Terre Haute, Indiana is the host where Indiana State is located. They're the host of that regional. I think North Carolina can get through. We talked to Darren Vaught, our good friend, earlier this week from USA Baseball. He felt that the winner of Campbell and NC State, in which case NC State today, has a legit chance of not only getting through that regional into a super regional, but really can find their way into Omaha. Campbell has a tough road. They're a really, really good team. They got a tough road ahead.
Yeah, when you lose that first game in this regional round, it really is a long slog. You've got to use a lot of pitchers to get through it. They've got to win four games in a row to get out of here now. It really is tough if you lose that first game to get back to where you want to be.
Yeah, because you're gonna have to win multiple games. Potentially might have to do a doubleheader on one of these days. So win multiple games because, for example, if Campbell – let's say Ryder loses to South Carolina. Okay, Ryder being the four seed in that region. Okay, Campbell has to beat Ryder. Then they have to beat the loser of NC State,
South Carolina,
which so they could potentially play NC State again. Now you have to get through that game. Then you got to win two more.
Right.
You got to win two more. Like you said, four wins. That's why winning on day one in the regional, so vital.
Yeah, and it – you know, both Iowa and UNC are sending kind of their number two starters out there, holding back the aces, I guess, for Indiana State. There are a lot of strategy here. You know, I know LSU's throwing – they're the number one seed in theirs. They're throwing their ace, probably likely number one pick in the MLB draft. They're throwing him tonight rather than save him for tomorrow. It really does – it is a game of strategy here for the managers trying to decide, you know, do you use your best ace in the first game – or depending on who you've got to play on the second day, or is it better just, hey, let's make sure we get a win so we don't have to face that, you know, four-win situation?
Yeah.
And then by the end of the weekend, you'll see the scores rise because teams are exhausted. Their pitching staff is just about used up. And so when you get to those final games on Sunday, the scores in the College World Series or now you got me calling it the College World Series.
It's College World Series, Brian. It's the College World Series, Brian Murphy.
The scores will go up in this regional because pitching staffs get exhausted by Sunday and if any of these extend into Monday.
I could see the mindset of you want to use maybe your ace in game one, like you said, to go ahead and not have to worry about having to win four straight. But if that starter can go deep into the game, get seven innings, you don't have to get to your bullpen super early in the regional. Your bullpen is well rested and ready to go. So, for example, you look at what NC State did today in terms of their pitching staff. They only had to use three pitchers today. Their starter only went four and a third, had 71 pitches, but they only had to use two guys coming out of the bullpen, which is vital, again, this time of year, having
right.
those arms.
And Duke getting a big 12-3 win means they probably didn't have to go to their A number one bullpen guys. Able to rest a few guys and know that tomorrow they're going to have a big game likely against Coastal Carolina.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.